Chapter 31. Virginia. Détente. The battle for Phobos is turning into the type of battle students of history shake their heads at. It is pugilism without any other recourse, as uncomplicated as it is brutal, measured less by the inventiveness of clever commanders and more by their willingness to sacrifice men and the willingness of those men to be sacrificed. While tactics can be used nearer the surface of Phobos, with either side daring the guns of opposing warships to launch canyon attacks to flank the enemy, the battle for the interior is an affair of will. How many men will Lysander or Julia or Cicero or Apollonius sacrifice to gain another level, another 100 meters of tunnel, another sector to fill? How many sons and daughters of Mars will I spend to stop them? Victor is still lost behind enemy lines. With no prisoner of equal value to trade, Cavex is still in enemy hands. No word has come from Darrow or Severo. Our battered fleet dares not challenge the enemy away from the surface we still control. We cannot get reinforcements from Mars. As the days progress, and the hours in the command center of the Hollows with Screwface, Harnassus, and Niobe bleed into one long, stale nightmare fueled by coffee, protein injections, and casualty reports, I feel the gulf between my concept of leadership and Lysander's growing. Lysander may promise a new age, but he'll sacrifice a generation to get it. The enemy creeps forward, meter by meter. I see no way to turn the tide. Knowing how easy it is to become alienated by casualty reports and to measure lives in terms of ground lost or gained, I force myself every morning and night to visit the wounded. It was Holliday who told me if I forget to feel the cost, I will grow accustomed to it, like Darrow did. I love my husband, but I know the Republic cannot afford for me to follow in his footsteps. 12 days after Loon's assault on Phobos, the medical wing of Bastion 4 overflows with fresh intakes. I slept poorly, snatching only 4 hours of sleep between assaults against our front and the Hollows. Niobe woke me to help rebuff the latest assault. It's all I can do to manage a smile, a kind word, and pretend I don't see the horror in the dying as I move bed to bed. Holliday limps behind me. Her ribs were crushed by Apollonius's boot, and she is not yet fit for frontline duty. But she rivals me in popularity and refuses to stay in our hospital bed. The horrors have not changed since my first visit. Young faces of all colours are peeled back by fire, the bodies riven by metal and energy. We could heal almost any one of them, but not all of them. Not all at once. Moving bed to bed, I clutch their hands and let them talk. Give each their moment, even if it wears me thin. The wounded whisper the big words pushed by our violet and red propagandists. Freedom. Hope. Reaper. I find it remarkable that the dying have not lost faith. In fact, they cling to it more fervently than those who still retain their faces or limbs. They do not ask me where Darrow is. They do not beg me to tell them why he has not returned. They clutch my hand till their knuckles go white and tell me he will return, and with him he will bring dawn for his friends and judgment and doom to the enemies of freedom. I weep after my visit. I am jealous of their faith, jealous they cannot see the struggle from my seat. Thankful for it, too, because I know the odds better than the young men and women who've given their youth, their lives for our cause. I pity them for their faith in my husband as much as I cherish and admire their conviction. Golds are a faithless breed, founded in the gross sobriety of atheism, but the rest of the colours are willing to believe. When they die, holding my hand, when they whisper Darrow's name, when they say they will find peace in the Vale, I break a little more, And each time I find that, in the breaking, I grow stronger, more desperate to protect this beautiful idea my husband has awoken, that I have helped prosper. They do not crave freedom for themselves. They crave freedom for others, for those yet unborn. In that I find a dignity greater than any gold virtue. Theirs is a religion of hope, not doom. But in the face of an enemy that will not stop, that takes every concession as a foothold for further aggression, I know I must find a way out of this fight, or it will drink up more of Mars's strength than we can afford. When I arrive back in my Hollows command center from my nightly inspection, there is a commotion in the assembly area where the troops parade. Flanked by officers, Niobe greets me. Her bird's nest hair is tangled from a long day in the operations room. "What's all this?" I ask of the shouting soldiers. Her eyes are filled with tears. I fear the worst, until she kisses me on the mouth and takes me to see for myself. Soldiers and medici and engineers fill the southern tunnel entrance to the assembly area with cheers so loud I think Darrow has returned. I push with Niobe through the mob to see Victra striding in, looking like hell warmed over. Thraxa is beside her. Behind them lumber the fighters of Pegasus' legions. Victra's eyes are bloodshot and feral, but when she sees me, she calls out, "My sovereign! I bring tidings from Sector One, also known as the Arsehole of the Worlds," the Legion shouts. "And gifts. Cicero, our votum." She thrusts forward Cicero and the end of a leash and holds up a rotted head. "And Ajax, our grimace. The rest of him couldn't make it."